This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome to the Countdown Podcast and our review of the Trial of the Chicago 7. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome then to this review of the latest big release from Netflix.
Biggin.
Written and directed by Aaron Sorkin and stars, well, quite a cast of people. Yahya Abdul-Mateen II, Sacha Baron Cohen, Daniel Flaherty, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. There's a bit of a spoiler here in a cameo, so I'm going to skip over that one.
Good.
Frank Langella, John Carroll Lynch, Eddie Redmayne, Mark Rylance, and Jeremy Strong. The film is 130 minutes long. The budget was only $35 million, which I'm a little surprised at, to be brutally honest.
Yes.
It's a pretty slick-looking film for that amount.
Agreed.
And over to you, Wayne. What is this one about?
The Trial of the Chicago 7 is about, well, basically, during the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago, there were these massive demonstrations against the Vietnam War, which was kind of reaching its peak at the time. And then when a curfew was finally instated, this led to even further protests, eventually leading to a police riot. Following this, seven of the demonstrators were tried for conspiracy, and this movie is the story of the trial that followed. Paul, were you across this?
Oh, God, no.
Historic event?
This is really fascinating, I think, from an Australian perspective.
Absolutely.
Because it predates you and I in terms of our existence in this universe.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I think this might be very common knowledge to, maybe to our American listeners.
Stateside, yeah.
And maybe less so, unless you're well-versed in history and the like, for the non-American listeners. So I definitely fall into that category.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was.
Therefore, I was fascinated to see how this all sort of played out. Now, Rotten Tomatoes, can I just say, 93% of people, reviewers, have given this a favorable review of 210 reviews with average rating of 7.93 out of 10. So this is beloved by critics. What I'm hearing in the podcasting community, including from our good friends Dan and Caleb at Netflix and Swill podcast, well liked. So will we fall into the same category? Wayne, yes. What did you think overall of the Trial of the Chicago 7?
Great. Really great.
Was there any doubt?
You
Aaron
know what?
Sorkin and Wayne.
I am such a fan. I am
of
such
course.
A fan. Of course. I know. And he's...
Well, I say of course to anyone. Yeah. If you're new to the show, welcome. It's great to have you here. If you're a long-term listener, you knew Wayne was going to love this one.
Dude. Okay, first of all, like you said, I didn't know shit about any of this, right? The opening sequence, loved it. Gives you a lot of information in an amusing way. And what I love about Aaron Sorkin is that, I say this all the time, but it's like a lot of pithy, erratic dialogue. And
I think that was toned down, this film. I think it was a much more... level kind of people speaking like people.
Did you think that? Because when I was watching, like, not so much that opening bit, even though that's constructed really well, I'm not really impressed that he directed this as well. This guy knows his shit. You didn't like that?
You're touching on what I think is less of a strength of the film.
Let's get to that, okay? Because here's the thing, right? I, watching this movie, first thing I'm noticing in maybe the first act is sitting there and I'm going... This is actually quite agitating, the way that the characters are. It's electric, man. This dialogue is electric. I don't think anyone else can do that. Quentin Tarantino can't even do that. It's not electric. Quentin Tarantino's writing is like beautiful and entertaining.
Give me a choice between Tarantino writing a script, as long as it's about the right things, like, you know. Sorkin's going to have the strength in certain genres, if I can put it that way.
Do you know what?
I would rather a Tarantino script.
Okay, I get this. Right? So Tarantino, this is the thing about Tarantino. His writing is fucking cool. It's actually cool. Actually look at it and this motherfucker he's not cool, but his work is cool. Right?
Ironically.
No, but that's cool. It's wicked. Aaron Sorkin, though, his is just effective to me. Like it's this could easily be boring as fuck, this movie.
I find Aaron Sorkin's typical script dialogue to be just as unrealistic as Quentin Tarantino's.
Agreed.
And yet,
and I have no problem with that.
I'm more put off by it because it's most of Sorkin's films are set in real world today.
I see what you mean. It's not a Western and it's not a this and it's not a
It's not of a different time.
I understand why you think that, but here's the other thing to me, right? So as you know, the most important thing is that it's entertaining.
Sure.
Right?
For you?
For everyone, man.
To a degree.
You don't go to movies to not be entertained.
No.
You don't.
You go to a movie.
You don't go there to cry unless you're a chick. So it's like...
Hold on. I think what you're trying to say there is that we like to feel something when we watch a film. Sure.
No. You like to be entertained. That's the thing you want to feel.
No.
If you walk in there devastated...
That's what you want to feel.
All right. How about this? Maybe you're...
I think the average person goes into a cinema wanting to be moved.
Well, let me ask you this then. if you're moved, freaked out, felt something, are you not entertained by that?
Sure.
So,
but like, okay, you know, there are some films which I was not entertained by, but I was moved by. Beast of No Nation did not entertain me. As an example.
I think you find it did.
Nope.
I think you hated like the things in it, but you probably were entertained. That's why you stayed.
No.
If you weren't entertained, you'd be bored, you fuck off. You see? Okay, it is.
By your definition of entertainment, you're bored or you're not, sure. But I don't think entertainment is
perhaps
a...
interested. It would be a good word.
That's a better
interested,
word.
Yeah. But you're still entertained because you're staying there. If you're not interested, you're not entertained. Boom. So anyway, sorry. That aside. This is really trademark Taylor Sorkin stuff. Now, what interests me is like, there's lots of pressure, lots of dominating personalities, lots of erratic moments. And my point about this whole thing is that, yes, it's unrealistic. There's no way everyone's this fucking good at talking.
Exactly. That's my point.
I don't give a fuck. I don't want to hear some boring fuckers talk shit and not be interesting. I need interesting motherfuckers. The more the better, the cooler the better. All right? So I say that if he was writing real people, fuck that shit, man. I'm not watching that.
No, but he's hyper elevated.
Yes, right? Hyper is good.
There are heaps of other better dialogue writers.
You reckon?
Yeah, there are, because they more realistically capture dialogue without the ums and the awkward pauses and the
those
whatever
are the genius points, man. His little stupidly quirky moments, like where it's like someone's got some problem with something and why are they even lingering on this? But for some reason it adds to the overall effect of the dialogue being alive to me.
Whereas for me,
yeah,
I get tired of everybody in an Aaron Sorkin script being fucking Yale level fucking intelligence.
Yeah, but otherwise,
it's boring.
It is boring, but it's realistic.
And it's not realistic. No, let me tell you the last thing it is.
You know what it is? You know what it is? Here's the thing, people. Paul's a very clever man. He's got, you know, degrees and shit, right? So
so do many of us.
No, so do many of you. Of course, many of you. And I think the fact that you listen to this show, although I would be sort of a bit of a, I'm maybe not the reason, but like the fact that you listen to shows and you're entertained at all by any kind of this type, you generally do like intelligent people. You
banter,
hang around them.
Banter, sure. Like
no, but you hang around intelligent people. Like if there was someone who was stupid and you thought they were stupid, you wouldn't know them. So kind of it is realistic. Okay, unless you're stupid.
The Social Network, for example,
yeah,
is a much elevated version of this film in terms of its dialogue.
Agreed.
There's not one dumb thing said by anybody unless they're portrayed to be, I'm sorry to say this,
stupid.
A stupid girlfriend of one of the main characters. Yeah. Right?
Otherwise known as writing a script.
No.
It's got to be interesting, so you can't have any boring.
My large
ones.
Problem with Sorkin, and this is not the case, because I want to emphasize here, I think this is a better example of what. And maybe that's because I don't understand how people spoke in 1968 because I wasn't around.
It's not that
to
at all. It's not that at all.
But the point is that I wasn't as put off by his dialogue in this film because it's in a courtroom setting, most of it, where people are required to speak formally and people are required to think before they speak.
Good call.
Right? Whereas, say, at a college level where we're all having beers, none of that's realistic.
Okay, network. I've got some news for you, Paulie. You and I used to speak like that when we were kids. You and I used to speak like that. I'm telling you. I'll tell you why I know. My little sister was hanging out with us one time, and we had one of our fucking conversations. Nah, she was whatever. I don't know, right? Odd. She goes. You guys use odd words. I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, Paul said this once. He said,
whatever it was.
Yeah. Paul said, Neil's weirdness manifested itself once again the other day. Paul said that, right? I remember you saying that, okay? That's not how people talk either. I'm telling you that this type of shit is actually how people do talk.
I don't think so.
You did say
watch
that.
Watch social networking. I'm not saying I didn't say that. Well, see, I may have said something
the social
like
network,
that.
You've got nerds like Jesse Eisenberg, right?
No,
you've
not
got
Jesse Eisenberg. I think you mean Mark Zuckerberg.
Mark Zuckerberg. Yes, but the point being that he's playing a nerd, right? So, and then the only other cracker who's cool is like Justin Timberlake, right? And then so
but
he's
all like that.
But he's saying cool shit. Jesse Eisenberg is actually kind of annoying in the way he talks like this.
If you've been to uni/college, you'll know there was a bunch of dumb fucks that get in
is
there.
So? I only went to uni after work and then I dropped out. but yeah, so okay, all right. Well, that aside, okay, we don't agree on that.
Point being, we don't agree. But this film was better, is what I'm trying to emphasize. And that didn't put me off at all. What did put me off is this is a really boring to look at film.
No. Like
visually, there's nothing stand out about it at all. Right, it's all right. So by the numbers. Camera movement, lighting, editing. The editing is interesting only from, and this is a good part of the film. The script, again, so we come back to Sorkin as a script writer. He writes the script to be, I can't tell the story from beginning to end. He mixes it up so you're like, oh, they're all arrested. What's going on? Why were they arrested? Oh, is doling out information slowly whilst they're talking about it in court, or while witnesses on the stand talking about it in court. Very good.
Absolutely.
Really like that.
Absolutely.
That mechanism of the film. What I don't appreciate is, compared to something, say, like Murder in the First, do you remember that movie?
Barely.
Dynamic, wonderfully shot film, some incredible shots.
Who was
steady
that?
Cams moving up. Yeah. That was Christian Slater and now Jason
I remember
Patrick.
Now I remember it, yep. Yeah.
Beautifully shot film. This film is so paint by the numbers. Now I see $35 million. Like, ah, okay. All right. But still, I wanted more from it visually because I was a little bored at times, this movie, and
well,
I shouldn't have been.
Aesthetically, okay, there are two of the ugliest periods, decades in history.
Here we go.
The ugliest was the 90s. Okay.
Oh, okay. So,
and oh, then, no, it's not.
And then you're saying 70s?
70s is the second ugliest.
The film takes place in 68 and the trial's from 69 to 70.
So around that period.
Okay.
It's around that period. Ironically, the best looking in history.
Don't say 80s.
60s. Okay. 60s. Right. There's nothing better looking than the 60s in terms of like, anyway. So from that point of view, I can see why you look at this thing. Anything set in the 70s is always a bit shit. It's always a bit shit looking.
Well, it's barely set in the 70s. It's mostly 69.
I'll give you some
news. That scene where 69, they're confronted around Christmas is 69 Christmas into 70.
The first year of the next decade is just the last year of the previous decade.
Oh, here we go.
It's always like that. No, but like in 1980, people were still talking about the 70s. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that. It's really the 70s.
So Wayne, for
there
Wayne,
were
the 70s,
children still.
The 70s goes from 73 to 82. Just so you're aware.
No, I'm just saying colloquially, people definitely really moved on from the next decade into
I understand
the last. So anyway, so that's why I would imagine that you think it looks a bit shit. It does look drab. It's not shit,
just average.
Average. Okay, but here's what I would say though. I actually wrote a note here which said, I think it's actually filmed well because it felt to me like I was in the middle of the courtroom. I actually felt like I was right there and they were speaking through me to the judge and stuff. So something he did for me was right. So okay. Interesting that we differ on that point.
I think what we'll both agree on is the performances in this film are electric.
I would say definitely, although I can't say the Sacha Baron Cohen thing
was good.
So he's doing like a Bostonian accent. Or something?
Okay, I don't know about the accent.
Yeah,
again, I'm not the world's expert.
I don't know. I'm just saying.
But I think he disappears into this role. Like he's so not Borat, and he's so not anyone else he's been before. I really appreciated that.
It's definitely
that's
nothing
acting
he's done before. Absolutely. I would say, though, that I, for a second here and there, I didn't buy his accent. That's a couple times. Okay. A couple times. Fine. So you can tell.
Whereas JGL is like, he's given very little to do.
JGL's the tits.
No, see, that's your bias.
Come on, he's the tits.
It's your bias.
I agree. He's given very little to do, all right? But what he's doing.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt, sorry. Just to
Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Yeah, he's. I'm buying everything when he's the you know the prosecutor guy who runs into the defendants in the park and then he tells his kids to go do this and he talks and he's still very like it's again stilted. Aaron's. I thought he cut every little fucking like comment like it landed each one landed yeah. Boom.
I
boom,
thought
boom.
It was average.
Really?
I thought it was
the role was not the role was not huge.
But the standout without a doubt, yeah. Frank Langella, dude. Fucking nails this Judge Hoffman dude.
Oh no, he's the bomb.
Oh.
He's such a prick, and you're actually, yep. Like, when he does things, you're like, like, the, you know, because you're like, this guy is fucking corrupt.
Now, and this is the point to emphasize, probably should have been at the very top of this review, how timely this film is. I know we're a few months late, really, for the whole Black Lives Matter
movement. Oh, yes.
But to think that in 2020, 52 years after the riots that took place, we're still, in a different way, and in some ways, grappling with those issues. And again, I don't want to say it's just about America.
Not at all. But
we don't have it nailed here in Australia by any stretch of the imagination.
It's definitely more like you're looking at it now and you're, holy shit, look at this injustice. I would say right now, it's because they didn't have the internet back then, man. They were organizing riots on the street. People had to turn up. If there was the internet back then doing that with that kind of injustice, I reckon it would have been just like now. So agree.
Yeah, definitely so timely. But it's disturbing to think that you watch this movie and you go like, oh my God, how bad was it? How could a judge get away with saying those things? He's so fucking racist and hateful. And at one point he even says, I've been in this world for a long time.
Yeah.
And I've never been accused of being racist. And that's a wonderful scene. I won't spoil it any further than that.
The whole thing
haven't
is
hit spoilers yet.
Remember, this is the guy who played Skeletor in Master of the Universe, okay? He can do whatever he wants.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
So, I mean, like, word, but, you know, but he's really great. True.
He's fantastic. Mark Rylance, if you can get past his ridiculous comb over, which, for the record, is not as bad as the real dude's comb over.
Is that so?
Because I had a
oh
looked,
my God.
Up, looked up at this. Incredibly, he is not as bad.
That is horrendous. I would say that Mark Rylance did such a good job of making me take him seriously despite that hair. That's what I'll sit there going, this guy's like, I'm still listening to him and he looks like that. So well done.
That's fair.
So, you know, I think so. Can we, when are we?
Can I mention very quickly Jeremy Strong as Sacha Baron Cohen's sort of right-hand man, the other yippie dude?
Was that Jeremy Strong?
Yeah. Also very good. He's got the most comedic moments in the film, I would say. It's like, you
know. Is he from the Gentleman?
Yeah, absolutely. He's the guy from The Gentleman. So
yeah, yeah. He's doing to get this. Did you think to me he's doing Tommy Chong? Hey Ned, how's it going, man?
I didn't think okay, that at the time.
But it's still good.
But when you contrast the Gentleman role versus this role, you can see again.
I did not recognize
an actor who can disappear into it.
And I mean, he's behind that beard and everything, but still, yeah. I could not see. Yeah, you're right. He's the bomb.
So yeah, I think all the performances. I gave Yahya Abdul-Mateen the second.
He's the Black Panther leader.
Piece of shit. In Aquaman, he was so terrible as Mantis.
Oh, that's where I've seen him before. Yes, I remember now.
Yeah, it's nice to see he can act as well. Because this is the other big role I've seen him in, and as the leader of the Black Panthers, and that the treatment he got is just it's hard. I guess we'll have a big spoiler section because this is a matter of history. Yeah. What happens here? Yeah.
You want to just drop it?
Yeah, well, let's move on to the spoilers and we'll go from there. But basically, it's a big recommend from Wayne. Huge. Good recommend. In fact, a big recommend for me too. This is one of the year's best. Check it out if you haven't already.
You can't handle the truth.
All right, now we're into spoilers.
Okay, so, that moment that you're talking about where the Black Panther leader was taken over, like he's
beaten.
Yeah.
Bound and gagged.
Up, gagged, and like the way that the judge said, take this man away and deal with him as he should be dealt with.
Yes.
Literally saying, like, it's known, you should go rough him up.
And that's the point when JGL's character...
That was a great moment.
Stands up, he can't handle it anymore, and he says, look, I think we need to move from his trial. And that's when the judge recognizes, shit, if the prosecution...
Is willing to let this go.
Not just let it go.
No, sorry.
Is saying it's unacceptable. I need to back
that
down.
That was the best moment. He sits there and he's like, okay, go counsel, talk to whatever. And he's about to start his thing and he's looking at this guy, this black guy bound and gagged next to him.
In a courtroom.
And he just goes, can we approach? Walks up, says, Your Honor, we've got a bound and gagged person in an American courtroom.
After however many months, I think at this point, 93 days or 83 days, I forget, where he has said repeatedly, my counsel is not here, and the judge ignored him. Can you believe the shit? Even in 68.
I know. And if it's on record as well.
It is on record. And most of this film, which I've done my research and I want to talk a little bit about, most of it is true.
Cool.
Not all of it.
All right. No, that's right. It's a movie.
But most of it's true, which is why it gets a recommend from me in the end. Big recommend. I hate fucking based on a true story films that completely revamp it to just for entertainment purposes. That doesn't work for me. A la Sully.
Oh, okay, fair enough. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
We created this complete fabrication of what happened after the plane crash just to make it interesting for 90 minutes. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Whereas this had basis in reality. Judge Hoffman, to his death day, he was interviewed 6 or 7 years before he died.
Yeah.
I acted entirely appropriately and don't believe I did anything wrong.
I don't have any...
What the fuck?
No. He of course, he has to live with himself. To him, that's how he was okay. He can't admit to himself that I was a piece of shit because he's about to die. He's going to hell if he thinks that.
He's going to hell anyway.
But he's like...
If there is such a thing.
Well, this is what I'm thinking. Like, that was what... Like, but then at the end, they have that little sort of... The little note that says that 78% of Chicago lawyers who were polled said he was a piece of shit.
Yeah, but that's my point. He didn't reflect on that afterwards and change.
No, he's an old man. Do you think these people change?
Well, he lived till like 80... He lived 20 years longer than that and never changed his tune.
It's weird that a judge like that gets into the system. You know what I mean? But I guess it happens. Sure, it happens, right?
Apparently, most of the contempt of courts he handed out at the end. So it wasn't true that he stopped in the middle of say, contempt of court for you.
What is contempt of court? Do you get
especially
like
when you?
No, I know what it is, but like, what's the? Well, can you go to jail?
Yeah, absolutely. So Bobby Seale,
yeah,
the leader of the Black Panthers. I think he was charged with 16 or something like that counts of contempt of court, which together would have carried a 4-year jail term.
Really.
But he won on appeal.
Yes, well,
and that was overturned.
Thankfully.
Because eventually, I would assume his lawyer said, I wasn't there, it wasn't right. And the next judge went, yep.
That's right.
Done.
Absolutely.
Simple as that, I hope it was.
Oh, well, now, can we talk about the awesomeness that is Michael Keaton?
Yeah, all right. So that was the cameo I was alluding to earlier.
Oh, dude. When Michael Keaton turns up, I went, oh, Batman's in it!
That was the moment I just went, well, whatever chance Wayne had of not liking this film just evaporated.
Dude, Michael Keaton is always a pleasant surprise. Even in a shitty RoboCop remake, he can be good. Okay? And what I liked so much about his character, he's like, you know, yeah, I brought these guys in here.
Ex-attorney generals.
Ex-attorney generals, right? And he says, I brought them in here so I could tell you them to fuck off, like, in front of you kind of shit, right?
I even like the Eddie Redmayne moment where he says, you need to find your courage.
Yeah, and he goes, found some. Yep. I was like, oh yeah, motherfucker.
I love the way he didn't turn around to right that moment, just go, fuck you, little young shit.
That's right. But that's what made it cool. Again, Aaron Sorkin strikes again, man.
No, that's good.
Whole thing was good boom. Scene. So,
okay, shit. Here's the other part I didn't like. So now we're really arguing. Spoilers.
Okay, let's go.
I didn't like the way we went. We had Sacha Baron Cohen's character up on the stage, Abby, I think.
Yep.
And we fade to black on a critical question, and we come back, and they're just escorted out in their prison uniforms. The five of them now, because they had a an important conversation, where you two are the sort of, so to speak, patsies that we throw out there.
Kick free, yeah.
That they're going to give you freedom because you really didn't do anything, and they're going to skewer the rest of us. And that's exactly what has happened.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted that moment. I want, for an 130-minute film, if I'm deprived of the moment where they're guilty or not guilty, is handed down. That's Sorkin trying to be too clever.
Or it was an editing decision because it went long.
Bad decision.
No?
He's a director and he's a writer. He may not have had, say, on Final Cut, but he certainly would have had to sign, like, all right, I get where you're coming from.
See, I like the fact that they explained it to you and said, these guys are going to go free.
But I wanted that. I wanted to see their reactions. Like, that's the human moment where these guys have argued, and Mark Rylance's character, lawyer character, argued so well. And I wanted to see Frank Langella give his announcement when the jury, which they had again tampered with and got rid of juries,
but it was 8 and 11. That was nuts.
I wanted to see that. And I think that's a real blight on the film for me.
Yeah, I didn't miss it. But I get it. I get it. Okay. No, not bad. All right. So you think that I think you're warmer on this than I don't know how you feel about this, actually. This is a performance movie, man.
Yeah, look, again, some other little things. Hmm. Bobby Seale, he wasn't just gagged and bound for like 20 minutes. He was gagged and bound for days in real life.
Really?
According to the article that I'm looking at here.
As in the court session is over, they
every
bring him back.
Every time he came back in.
Yep. Oh, really?
Maybe Hoffman checked in with him with the same way they did in the film and said, are you prepared? Shook his head. That's just astounding.
Bound and gagged.
Was it a show trial? Well, clearly it was a show trial. Clearly, and this is, if you needed any indication of where Nixon would end up, here it is. You know, I want to put these fucking lefties in their place.
Mm, totally.
And then, yeah, the police and even the female character who got involved with Ruben, like for 92 hours, funniest bit of the movie.
I thought that was hilarious because he's like, I thought you liked me.
She wasn't real. She was an amalgamation of several characters who had influence
That's
proceedings.
That's fine. I don't want to see 10 scenes.
No, having a go at it.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting decision to make it like that and have her sitting in court. And she was another person who showed no remorse at
that was a problem because I was hoping that what the saving grace is here is that Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Michael Keaton, the ones that you sort of kind of throw in on, they at least have like integrity. Like they, you know, like he'll go mistrial if the guy's gone. And then Michael Keaton's like, fuck everything. This could ruin my business. I don't care. This ain't right. So there's cool stuff like that going on in the movie and you appreciate those characters.
And apparently these defendants were acquitted of conspiracy in the end. Except a couple of them, and they were each fined $5,000 and sentenced 5 years in prison. However, in May 72, it was all reversed in an appeals court, as it says at the end of the movie.
So were they in jail for any time?
Yeah, for a couple of them, for a couple of years.
Oh, really?
And I think it says that Abby, he committed suicide.
Yeah, it says that.
After he wrote his book.
Steal this book. Yeah, and the other guy became a freaking stockbroker.
Yep.
That's cool. The hippie became a stockbroker.
And Eddie Redmayne's character, I can't remember his name, he went on to have a big career in politics.
Politics, exactly. Yeah. So, which is cool. I wonder if he kept his politics.
Mm.
A lot of people get in there and they're like, hey, I'm whatever, and then they just get turned by the machine.
Best scene in the whole film when Mark Rylance is pretending to cross-examine Eddie Redmayne's character about how the riots got going. As when he said, the blood, it'll be our blood, whatever that fills. And then at the end, they all realize what he was actually trying to say.
But
he got so angry and upset, he realized he couldn't be on the stand, put Abby on the stand.
Yeah, that was good. Yeah, this would be gold all over the place. How long was this movie, Derek?
130 minutes.
Yeah. Look, I was sitting there going, I'll just watch this. I did it last night. I came home from work. I'm like, oh, a bit knackered. Let me just put this. Thrilled. Riveted.
All right. What do you give it then, Wayne? What's your final score and your final thoughts on the Chicago of the final seven?
Chicago of the final seven gets an 88.
Wow.
Yeah.
Because this is your film of the year.
I don't know. I can't fault it. I can't sit there and... Like, you had problems, specific problems with it. I had none of those problems. I can't even say it bored me in places. You know, sometimes the drama in the middle. 88, man.
I'm giving it 74.
74. Huge for you.
Yeah, very good film. Very enjoyable. Definitely my top 10 of the year. We'll be talking about it again coming years. And apparently higher for you.
Yeah.
So, there we are. All right. Well, that's our review of The Trial of the Chicago 7. What did you think? Did you like it? Have you checked it out yet? If you haven't, get on board. Do so and then let us know your thoughts. And you can do so via email thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com, via Twitter, thecountdownpc. Check us out. Like, follow the show on podbean.com. Facebook's community is where we have a discussion about these kinds of things. Mm-hmm. The link's in the show notes. And that is it for our review today. Thanks so much for joining us. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And there wasn't much reason to use it today.
Good.
But nevertheless, it's a little sad that Wayne thinks...
Fuck you,
Aaron Sorkin.
Did you try to make this index correct this time?
Ooh,
not that time.
Syntax is correct. Shut your hole. We'll catch you next time. Cheers.